Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. How much time do you spend with your electronic gadgets? And how much time do you spend in nature? For the majority of Americans, the answer to the second question is definitely not enough. In our modern technology-rich society, only about 10% of teens and 5% of adults spend time outdoors every day. According to several studies, spending time in nature could counter the harmful impacts of our tech-immersed society, even a short walk in the park can benefit your brain. Time in nature has been linked to decreases in stress and depression, better concentration, and improvements in breathing function. So what does nature do to our brains? And how have our cognitive abilities changed as we spend less time outside and more time glued to our mobile devices inside? Today we are joined by David Strayer, professor of cognitive psychology at the University of Utah. He has investigated the effects of distraction on performance in a number of studies and the benefits of nature on our brain function. And David Strayer joins us from his office in Salt Lake City. Hi, David. Welcome to the show.
Hello.
Hello. Nice to have you. We are also joined by Dr. Nushin Razani, a pediatrician at UCSF Benioff Children's Hospital at Oakland. Dr. Razani is a pioneer in studying and prescribing nature for children, and she joins me here in studio. Hi, Nushin. Welcome to the show.
Hello.
Great to have both of you. So there was a fascinating article in the most recent National Geographic that looked at how spending time in nature greatly benefits our brains and our bodies. But it also pointed out that we spend less time outdoors, about 10% for teens and 5% for adults. David, let's start off with you because you were quoted in this article. How concerned are you about the fact that we are becoming more disconnected from nature, even though we, especially here in the Bay Area, are surrounded by so much beauty?
Yeah, I'm actually pretty concerned about it. What you see is people are spending more and more time, usually in front of screens, TVs, computers, video games, their cell phone, and at the same time, the amount of time they actually spend in nature or actually interacting with other people is declining. So there's a fixed amount of time, and if you're spending more time using kind of digital technology to multitask or whatever you're doing, you're actually spending less quality time in natural environments. It's just not a kind of situation that we evolved to interact in, and it has some harmful consequences.
And Nushin, as a pediatrician, you work with families on a regular basis, and you actually prescribe nature, and we'll talk about that later in the show. But what changes have you seen over the years with the families and the kids that you work with?
I definitely see a loss of a relationship with nature, and I think that being in nature is a form of social support, and there's an increase of loneliness and isolation. And I think part of that is a loss of, it sounds funny, but the relationship that you can have with a tree or with the land. And there's less connection to nature. That concerns me not only because of health consequences for people, but also because we need to advocate for nature. Mm. And if fewer people are connected to nature, there's going to be less people to advocate for nature.
You mentioned that you're seeing more loneliness and isolation. Was this a gradual change, or did this happen suddenly?
I mean, I've been growing with the change, and I think it's probably happening to me also. And so it's hard to pinpoint exactly when it happened. I've seen studies looking at visitation rates to national parks, and I think they point to somewhere around the 80s when personal entertainment devices were formed, like VHS gadgets at home. And I think that's when they started seeing the drop in visitations. I don't know if that answers the question about electronics.
No, that's fine because it's all connected.
Yes.
But what about that, David? I mean, it's hard to say that once cell phones became totally ubiquitous, that's when we started seeing the changes. But what do you attribute to what we're talking about here, just in terms of more isolation and more loneliness?
Well, I mean, I think you just see the trends in technology that started usually, and kind of look at it even in the early 50s with the slowly more and more TVs and digital TV screens and cable TV, and then with the advent of the internet and with the advent of cell phones, and then with smartphones that basically keep people plugged in all the time. You just see that it's been a continual process of more and more technology in our lives. And it's just crowding out other kinds of things that used to be there, including walking in nature, going on hikes, and interacting with other people. And we've just engineered a society that it's especially because a lot of these technologies, especially like the cell phone, there are some characteristics that are probably addictive, at least to some people, so that when the phone rings, you have to look at it. If a text message comes in, you have to look at it. And so we may be wired because these are social devices that allow us to do some social interaction via digital technology, that we're foregoing real interpersonal interactions and real interactions in the natural environment so that we can have this virtual connection on the phone.
Nishin?
I think since I work with kids, just in order to survive and be relevant to them, I have decided to work with technology. And I'm hoping that there's an in-between road where instead of taking away the technology, we learn to moderate it and to add nature. And I'd love to hear what people have to say, but whether there is a way to have it all.
Right, and find a good balance
right.
with the technology. And so, David, you have also done a lot of research about patterns of distraction, what happens when you're driving and you're talking on your cell phone. And isn't it interesting that we're doing this show about the benefits of nature and it's already turned into a conversation about using too much technology, right? I mean, they're both related. But let's talk a little bit about nature. And I'm sure when we get phone calls, we'll hear from listeners about just how difficult it is to put down that device and then the benefits of spending time outside. So there's so much research out there, David, about what nature is doing to our brains. And tell us about, you know, what the latest research tells us. There are so many benefits.
There really are. Interacting in nature, if you're kind of walking around, you obviously get the physical benefits. And those physical benefits, of course, help the body. But there's really good evidence that physical exercise, even modest walking in a park or something like that, has benefits in terms of the brain. So we see that there's chemicals, hormones, and proteins that are released that actually promote neurogenesis. So you create new brain cells to kind of, and it's one of the best ways to kind of reduce the effects of getting older is to continue to be physically active. So the mind and body are facilitated based on the exercise. We see that when you're out in natural environments that you reduce the level of stress, so it's a lower stress type environment. And when we look at just the cognitive function, your ability to be able to think and think creatively, we see that when you're in natural settings, when you're hiking in nature, that there's bursts of creativity. And we've been able to measure those bursts of creativity, reductions in stress, and overall better well-being when people are in a connected environment. And so it's actually, you know, it may be not surprising to some of your listeners, it may be surprising to others, but we're much more connected to the environment. So being able to see trees and being able to walk through those forests is very restorative.
Nishin, what would you add?
When you look at the role of nature from a pediatric perspective, you also see that being physically active in nature adds all kinds of dimensions that are important for development. For example, there are more opportunities to challenge your coordination and your balance. There's more opportunity for free play, which helps the development of executive function and of creativity and cognitive development. Again, there's the quality of interaction with adults in natural settings. And we have learned that these things, cognitive development and the quality of interaction with adults leads to resilience. And especially in this day and age, resilience is very important. They've done studies of people doing the same exercise inside nature and also in a more urban setting, and they found that being physically active in nature has the added benefit of mood, anger, emotional improvements. So it's not just the physical activity, but there's something about being in nature that helps.
We have a couple of emails already on this topic, so we would love to hear from you. We're talking today with David Strayer, professor of cognitive psychology at the University of Utah. He has investigated the effects of distraction on performance in a number of studies. He has also looked at the benefits of nature on our brain function. Dr. Nushin Razani is a pediatrician at UCSF Benioff Children's Hospital at Oakland and is a pioneer in studying and actually prescribing nature for children. And we'll talk about that on today's show. And we'd love to hear from you. How much time do you spend outside today? And how has your relationship changed, your relationship with nature changed over the years as you've started using various devices and have spent more time on a phone or your computer or a tablet? We'd love to hear from you. And also, if you have children, how much time are your kids spending outside versus spending time with a gadget? 866. You're listening to a rebroadcast of Your Call, so unfortunately, we can't take your phone calls. Join us live weekdays at 10 a.m. Feedback at yourcallradio.org. And when you are in nature, what changes do you feel? How does your brain feel? How does your overall state of well-being feel? And also, I'd love to hear this from both of you. Sometimes I'll stop at the beach to watch the sunset, and I notice that every single person is taking photos. So what about being in nature but always having your gadget with you to grab that moment and then put it on Facebook or text it to a friend? David, what are your thoughts on that?
While you're using technology, it's in the sense that you're kind of letting it be a layer between you and being in natural environments. So the best kind of experiences in nature are going to be ones where you don't tether a phone. We've done studies where people carry their phone on a walk, and even just carrying the phone when you get text messages and you don't look at your text messages disturbs the kind of restorative effects that you typically see when people take a hike through nature. So bringing technology, taking photos and things like that disconnects you from the being in the moment. That seems to be one of the important things, is kind of in that kind of moment, not ruminating about the future or the past, but kind of being in that kind of in the nature, in the moment. That seems to be really kind of one of the important essences of the experience.
And so when you're out in nature and you've got your gadget, you are multitasking and you're distracted.
You know, what we find is that, the reason that I talked about cell phones and why that's not so good is we found that if you're on your phone while you're in nature, you might as well not be in nature. You kind of erode most of the benefits.
We take patients out into nature once a month, and we definitely see that layer between parents and children. It's almost as if children are yearning to play with their parents and to be connected, and the parents are yearning to tell the story, and so they take pictures. One thing that we do is to have photographers on the trips to kind of alleviate the worry that parents have that they won't have this memory. And so we tell them that we will take photos and we will post it, and you can just play and actually remember this experience in a different way other than a photograph. So
we have a couple of questions about what it means to actually be in nature. Are you talking about going outside? Well, we were just talking about that, leaving the gadgets inside when you go outside. Are you talking about undeveloped land? Does it matter where you actually go? Can you just be out in an urban space? Or does it have to be out in the wilderness, for example? David?
Well, you see benefits when people hike in a park. When people walk through an arboretum, you see significant changes just in the kind of green spaces that we have in our urban settings. Go to a beach. Go walk through, one of the forests or something like that. And if you have the time to be able to take the luxury to take off longer periods of time and go to a national park or go to one of the wilderness areas that's around most of us, then that's great. But the benefits start to show up as soon as you start going on a walk in a natural environment, even in our parks and cities and green spaces in the communities we have.
So green spaces, but maybe not in like a San Francisco neighborhood. Is there a difference there?
Well, you know what they found actually is that even some of the cities that have more trees and tree-lined streets tend to show some of these benefits. And actually one of the things that was mentioned in the National Geographic article is that there are actually significant benefits to being in parts of the city that have it creates more of a cognitive positive benefit where there are trees. And you can actually even visualize the aerial photographs of places that are more restorative in our cities. They're all around us. You just need to find these little places and then spend time in them, and you'll notice that nature is there. It's abundant, but we kind of wall ourselves off from it if we're not careful.
And Nushin, you mentioned that once a month your patients go outside and the parents are also asked, please don't use your device, just be with your child. Mm-hmm. What do you hear from the child and the parent after this exercise?
Mostly we hear the stress relief as being just really wonderful. I mean, we see parents putting their feet up and sitting and watching their children experience joy. And so I think that's really where I came to appreciate the importance of nature and stress relief. From the children, we hear them talk about the freedom and just, I guess the word is joy. Going back to your question about how much nature is needed, I've seen all kinds of different studies, and I think this is why research is important. Some people are looking at trees, forests, whether it's the color green that's important, whether it's the patterns, whether it's the silence, or what exactly it is. I do know that for children, it doesn't have to be big and it doesn't have to be beautiful. Adults are attracted to aesthetically pleasing landscapes, but for children, it can be a very small area as long as it has little pieces of manipulative materials like leaves. I've seen in a lot of parks, once a leaf falls down, it's raked away. But it's exactly that chaos that a child enjoys and gains from.
What differences do you see between families who have the resources to take a week off and go camping or to go to Yosemite versus families that, in some cases, in urban parts of San Francisco, never even make it to the beach?
Our clinic, our primary care clinic, is a federally qualified health center. So we, by definition, treat people that live within 300% of the poverty line. So almost everybody that I see has multiple barriers to being in nature. And whether they don't have access, like you said, or whether there are parks but they're not safe, or they don't even have any leisure time at all, much less leisure time for being in nature. There are many barriers. I think when you get into higher income families, the time restriction may be more an issue of priorities other than actual leisure time. That's one of the main differences that I see.
Oh, let's take a few calls before we take a break. This is Your Call, and we are talking about the benefits of being in nature and putting your gadgets down, especially when you're in nature. Let's hear from Diane in San Francisco. Hi, Diane. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. I want to thank you very much for this topic. I think it's very timely and important. I'm an early childhood educator and have had the benefit of being in outdoor classroom environments in the past 3 years, which is a kind of a pop-up thing that's happening in San Francisco, at least. And I've noticed a great deal of benefit for children who might be on the spectrum. I feel that the and I think that's a very dicey term, but what I'm trying to say is that people who have perhaps special needs or extra sensitivities, that nature has a way of equalizing the children in a group environment, and as you say, and just within their own family, that it calms them down and it seems to give them that sort of rhythmic, whether it's on a walk or, like you were suggesting, with the patterns and the colors, just calming the senses in general. And I just wanted to chime in with that. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Diane. Mishin?
Thank you so much for bringing that up. I mean, we've definitely noticed that. And people are trying to tease that apart. There is a whole, I think now, a tradition of literature looking at attention and nature. And I've always wondered if part of that is because of the big overlap of attention issues with children who have special needs. We know that people in the psychology field have been using animal therapy for a long time for children with special needs. And so it would be really interesting to see what component of that there is. I do want to add that medicine is way behind, because psychologists have been doing this for a very long time, and educators, as you point out.
David, what are your thoughts on that?
You know, one of the areas that we see that seems to be really beneficial to being in natural environments and not excessive multitasking is the prefrontal cortex, the frontal portions of the brain that are responsible for higher order thinking and executive attention. And so if you see people, especially developmentally with kids who are trying to acquire new skills and kind of, you know, interact with other people and so forth, if you're overstimulating the prefrontal cortex with multitasking and not letting them explore and play, kids, that is, in particular, you're basically taking something that's really, you know, critical away from their development. And I've actually seen there are some states that are actually trying to get rid of, for example, recess because it's inconvenient. But those are the kinds of situations. Unstructured play tends to be hugely beneficial to our kids and to, you know, probably the developing mind.
Well, thank you again for calling in, Diane. Let's go next to Derek in Berkeley. Hi, Derek. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks so much. I am a park ranger in training. I'm taking classes over at Merritt College and Berkeley City College before transferring to UC Berkeley. And I can speak firsthand about the benefits of, I guess it would be called attention restoration theory. My grades have gone up since I've been spending more time out in nature, not just obviously the park ranger-y type classes, but math and the hard sciences. I've gotten A's, and I've found myself able to concentrate, less anxiety, more energy. And I really do think that the same way that there was a No Child Left Behind Act, unfortunately, there should be a No Child Left Inside Act with mandatory scheduled outside time, so that instead of kind of countering the effects that we have once we're adults and the damage is done, then instead the kids are kind of brought up with nature so that they'll carry that out with them later when they go into the world.
David, what got you to make these changes in your life?
You know, I just, it started off kind of very similar to what we just heard, that in my own experience, being out in natural settings, I would start to think very differently, more, just much clearer, notice and recalibrate things, my thoughts, hear sounds I hadn't heard before. It's as if we're kind of desensitized to a lot of things in kind of the modern urban environment, and nature, being in nature, kind of lets you recalibrate. But all the things you just heard about with attention restoration theory and improved cognitive functioning and better decision making and helping with executive functions, those kinds of things are being more and more better documented. And it turns out that you know, nature is, for most of us, relatively easily accessible. If that's a park or a natural park or a national park or something like that, but along the way, it's relatively free and has relatively little cost. If you can get to a park, it's a healthy and exercise or interact in that environment. It's mentally and physically healthy for the human.
And I'm sorry, Derek, I wanted to also ask you, I got Derek and David, we're so close there. I wanted to also ask you, what caused you to make these changes and spend more time outside? Do we have Derek back?
I'm here.
Hi, go ahead. Yes.
Sorry about that. Well, when I first started college, actually, I was going for energy engineering. I wanted to do like 3D printing solar panels based on biomimicry, like artificial photosynthesis. And that is kind of like the height of the technology dependency instead of like using actual nature or like recreating nature. And it was all fine and dandy, but then I had kind of an altercation. There's no other way to describe it. A couple students basically tried to jump me at school. And I got arrested, and I actually got taken to jail and saw some really horrible stuff inside Santa Rita Jail.
Wow.
And when I got out, I had PTSD. And my girlfriend at the time, who was a social worker, said, we should go out on hikes, get out in nature. She knew about nature restoration theory. And I took this class, and everything just changed. Not just the demeanor of the type of people I was around. They weren't angry tech heads that were constantly yelling at their computers or frustrated by slow technology. They were slower, calmer, more peaceful people. And we'd go out on these group hikes. The class was called Tree to Seed. And I couldn't even hold a beaker or a Bunsen after this happened because my PTSD was so bad that I would drop them. And when your midterm involves hydrochloric acid, you don't want to drop beakers and Bunsens. So when I started taking these classes, I just kind of realized that somewhere in me, there's always been this calling for nature to go and take care of wild animals and plants, and somewhere in there it just clicked, and now I've kind of like shifted my major, and this is what I'm going for, is wildlife conservation, specifically protecting mountain lions, apex predators, and things like that, keystone species, and just being out there. My whole life has changed.
Wow.
Like my mental outlook, my positivity, my ability to sleep. And I wrote a paper for my English final, which I got 104 on, about attention restoration theory and how it helped me. So I would love to share that with anybody who wants it, or I'd like to encourage people to go take community college classes like Tree to Sea with Nancy Sardwin and Robin Cook over at Merritt College, because sometimes people are scared to go out in the woods alone also. I mean, even if there aren't wild animals, let's face it, there are some things out in the woods, people sometimes, that are a little scary. If you're in a group, it's not so bad.
Well, and, Derek, thank you so much for calling. You're going to be an amazing park ranger, and you're going to do wonders for nature and the animals. So thank you so much for calling. On today's Your Call, we are talking about the benefits of being outside. What can we do to get more people outside without their gadgets? This is Your Call, and we'll be back after this. You're listening to a rebroadcast of this morning's Your Call. We cannot take your phone calls. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Today we are talking about the benefits of being outside. Research shows that being outside decreases your levels of stress and depression, helps you concentrate, and improves your breathing function. But only 10% of young people and 5% of adults spend time outside every day. So we'd love to hear from you. Do you spend much time outside? How does it make you feel? What about your children? What can we do to get more people to put down their devices and spend more time in the great outdoors? The toll-free number is 866.
This is a rebroadcast of Your Call, so unfortunately we can't take your phone calls. Join us live weekdays at 10 a.m.
5-5. Today we are joined by David Strayer, professor of cognitive psychology at the University of Utah. He has investigated the effects of distraction on performance. He's also looked at the benefits of nature on our brain function. Dr. Nushin Razan is a pediatrician at UCSF Benioff Children's Hospital at Oakland and is a pioneer in studying and prescribing nature for children. And let's go next to Shai in Berkeley. Hi, Shai. Welcome to the show.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Okay. So, you know, I'm just listening to what you're saying, and mostly the reason I'm calling is because of how, in the last few months especially, I've been going through an incredibly stressful and difficult time. Lots of family issues have come up of various things and all other kinds of surprise events on a day-to-day level as I try to kind of navigate through all this. And you know, nature, getting out, going for those hikes every day as much as I can, has pretty much saved my life in, like, at least my emotional well-being. So I really just wanted to call and share that and really encourage people who are going through any kind of big stressful times in their life, just how important it is to get out there and to, you know, breathe and appreciate life and appreciate things that they love and just give that kind of gratitude and thanks. And it really, you know, I'm listening to everything you're saying about the science of it, and absolutely, you know, from a personal point of view, it's just like, you know, on Friday, for example, something pretty big happened and kind of struck me pretty hard, and then I decided not to go for a walk, and it really affected me for days until I went out yesterday, and it helped so much more to be able to do that. So, you know, it's pretty much night and day when you're going through something big and you can get out there and just feel connected and feel really part of that. So I just wanted to share that and really encourage anyone who is out there to really go for a walk and see what that can do for you, and then do it a second day and a third day and see how that continues to help you.
Well, thank you so much for calling in, Shai. Nushin?
I want to thank both of the last two callers that mentioned the role of nature in PTSD and also in grief. I think that these observations, as well as the research, really lead me to think that access to nature is a human right. And I don't think that you can do this work, and once you notice how much nature is important to human beings, I don't think you can do this and not feel an urgency to advocate for equity in the distribution of nature, because really, we should not have to go anywhere. It should just be part of life. The research shows that the more stressed you are, the more underserved you are, the bigger the impact of nature. And so it should be opposite. It should be the poorest areas that have the most nature. And so I think the next step after realizing how good nature is for us is for everyone to band together and get nature everywhere.
Well, we have an email from Ruby about this. She says, how do we get city kids who don't have travel resources, we briefly touched on this earlier, and don't have knowledge of, quote, green space? We're talking about dangerous neighborhoods where walking could be life-altering in a negative way. Nushin mentioned the importance of the color green. What about free art posters distributed in schools that would provide a visual oasis of peace, serenity, and beauty? Any number of artists from the Impressionist to contemporary photography could give kids a visual time out. Do you think that this too would help?
I think that's an amazing idea. I think art and nature have always gone hand in hand, and I think that artists have always felt the importance of nature. I do want to be careful to not think that we are coming from a place of more knowledge than populations and teaching them about nature. If you look at almost everybody who's urban, they're only about one generation away from knowledge of nature. And even our most underserved families, especially refugees and people coming from abroad, already have a relationship with nature. And in many underserved communities, they may not use the terms urban gardening or green, but many of them already garden. And many of them have resources that can be strengthened and empowered and tapped into. And so I do think that city people have the capacity and the knowledge there and just need to, I guess, have less other things to deal with.
And what are your thoughts, David, in terms of access to nature?
Well, I mean, I think that we think about kind of in a sense a dose response. The more nature you can get, the more likely you're going to have substantial benefits. And so the extent you can hike around on the beach or in some natural in park or something like that, the more you're going to have restorative effects. But almost every city has little oases that allow you to go and be in a natural environment. And many of the schools, for a lot of the kids, it might be in situations where it may not be safe to go out to some of the parks. Certainly, there should be some access in terms of playgrounds and so forth where they can go out and play. It doesn't have to be pristine, as we just heard a little bit ago. Frankly, getting into dirt and exploring and unstructured play, oddly enough, you see that these benefits are actually much greater in playgrounds that aren't paved over. And so just the act of letting kids play in natural kind of settings and get dirty is restorative.
And I want to thank David for bringing that up, because San Francisco is really on the cutting edge of schoolyard greening efforts, and they are greening many schoolyards. There's been research showing that when a schoolyard is mostly concrete, it's the physically dominant kids that are the leaders. But when a greening happens, the more imaginative and more linguistic, I guess, children also have an opportunity to be leaders. Mm-hmm. And so even just greening a schoolyard changes the social structure between the kids.
What about looking at all of this through the public health lens? Because in some governments around the world, they're promoting nature experiences as a public health policy. Do you think a policy like this should be adopted in the U.S., Nooshin?
Oh, absolutely.
And what would it look like?
I don't think you can talk about public health without talking about equity. I mean, health equity is a big driving force in how we view public health. And so I think that a true public health intervention would have many levels. It would include a provider referral or prescription for nature, but it would also include multi-sector collaborations, including transportation, health, schools, to have more nature where it's needed. And it may even be healthcare providers advocating for forests, not even near cities, but just thinking about trees and forests as the lungs of the planet and as a air quality intervention. So I see public health and nature as very intertwined.
David?
I mean, I agree. We basically need to be able to try and make our living space so that there are connections to nature. And if it's trees and vistas and parks and national parks, and we should try as best we can to make sure that everybody has access to these resources, because they're really important to our well-being.
Speaking of national parks, Louise wrote in and said attendance at national parks is at its highest ever. They're so crowded you need reservations. But according to the National Geographic, in which article you were quoted, David, national parks and state parks, the per capita visits have been declining since the dawn of email.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's just there's more people, so you can have more people up going to the parks, but per capita going down. We just need to basically try and identify these spaces that are really kind of sacred. They're essential to our psyche, and we need to protect them. And we also need to make sure that not only they're protected, but that we can actually use those to kind of help our overall well-being. But national parks are one part of the whole system: national parks, state parks, and just the local community parks. They're all part of an essential, component of good human stewardship and well-being.
And Chris, who's a guide with Healthy Parks, Healthy People, wrote in and said, there are walks 4 Saturdays a month. Park prescriptions from health practitioners is part of the program. You can look at the Healthy Parks, Healthy People Bay Area Facebook page, free guided walks in 9 Bay Area counties, or the website is hphpcentral.com. Thank you so much for that, Chris. And actually, Nooshin, you work with the East Bay Regional Park District.
I do. They've been just most amazing partners in helping us really think about how to get patients into nature, because it's one thing to recommend it, and it's another thing to help people get through the barriers. They started by decorating our clinic with large posters. We have a huge, I think it's 18-foot redwood forest up in our clinic. And these posters are healing in and of themselves, but they also remind physicians and patients to think about and talk about nature. They also fund and run a shuttle that goes from our clinic once a month into nature. And then once our patients get into nature, they do programming for them there. And that's very important because for many underserved populations, actually, they may not feel welcome at parks. Even though I have to say East Bay Regional Parks are very welcoming and full of a very diverse group of people, but having that warm welcome is very important. Mm. I thank the caller for mentioning HPHP, Healthy Parks, Healthy People. That is a public health intervention that's happening across 9 Bay Area counties right now. My program is part of that collaborative, and there are First Saturday programs happening all around the Bay Area.
Well, thank you again for that email. That is Dr. Nooshin Razani, a pediatrician at UCSF Benioff Children's Hospital at Oakland. She's a pioneer in studying and prescribing nature for children. David Strayer is professor of cognitive psychology at the University of Utah, and he has investigated the effects of distraction on all of us and also the benefits of nature on our brain function. And if you'd like to join us to talk about the benefits of nature, how much time do you spend outside? What does it do for you? What about your children? If you work on trying to get more people outside, give us a call, 86. This is a rebroadcast of your call, so unfortunately we can't take your phone calls. Join us live weekdays at 10 a.m. Let's go to Harold in San Francisco. Hi, Harold. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, hi. On the street here, I'm going to go into a place where it's maybe not so noisy. My son was in both Afghanistan and Iraq. In the Marine Corps. I was also in the Marine Corps. When he came back, he wouldn't talk about anything for it. And I noticed that mostly what they did is, you know, they went out drinking, they went this and that, but finally my son got into surfing. It really made a tremendous difference in his life. He would talk about just sitting on the board, watching the waves come, and it's really been remarkable how he's now back in school, he's in college. I got a call from him last night. He was up camping, and I don't know what would have happened if he had just followed the route of so many people going on video games and continuing the drinking and whatever. So it's just amazing, and I don't know if the VA does anything about these guys when they come back, because, God, it's important.
Thank you so much for calling in, Harold, and sorry if you couldn't hear Harold. He's on a phone on the street, but he said that his son was in Afghanistan and Iraq, came back, really didn't talk about it, and was having a really hard time, and then when he started surfing, that's when things really turned around for him. David, what are your thoughts on that?
No, we're seeing actually the same kind of thing. There's a lot of people who are coming back from military service, and they have a lot of PTSD problems. And we're seeing that nature, especially nature in kind of doses that are kind of not necessarily threatening, tend to be very restorative. And so the descriptions that we just heard are consistent with what you're seeing, and more places are starting to actually use nature as a therapy for dealing with PTSD.
Well, thank you again for calling, Harold. Let's go next to Jack, calling from the Tree Spirit Project. Hi, Jack. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Rose. Thank you. First off, I just want to thank you so much for the show. I wish it was 4 hours, and I wish it was once a week. It's a huge topic, and I don't know where to begin. There's so many comments you've made that I wanted to add to, and I was just moved very much by the story we just heard. Which is, you know, as opposed to the scientific proof view that our culture requires so much. Just someone saying, wow, my son came back from war and was healed or helped just by being in nature. So for me, well, of course, this is why I've created what I have a fancy name for it, the Tree Spirit Project, but I'm a kid from New York who always felt calmer when I went out to the country north of New York City, and I just felt more alive and connected to nature. Always that way, unmediated nature. I mean, of course, everything is nature. Buildings and concrete is nature too, but there's something where the mind of man and the industrious hands of man don't change the environment. And as someone said, I think about leaves earlier in the show, you know, the children. And I think all humans just are fed emotionally and spiritually, as well as, of course, we can, quote-unquote, prove scientifically the power of just being away from our technology, away from phones and internet, and the things that we're increasingly addicted to, myself included, mm-hmm. as a photographer, as an artist, and just to be away from it, where nature does its magic. I mean, evolutionarily, for, you know, all of our existence on Earth, we've been part of nature in a way that only more recently, post-industrial industrialization, that we are no longer.
Well,
so of course, it affects us in a negative way.
Yeah, well, Jack, thank you. You brought up a number of really great points. And so, Nooshin, you're a pediatrician, and we live in a society where we want a quick fix, readily available drugs. So many prescriptions are now being written for children. So how do you, as a doctor, balance that sort of desire from the parent who wants a fix now and maybe even a pill, and when, you know, you're thinking, well, maybe you really need to just spend more time with your child and go outside? How do you balance those two?
I think that it's a fine dance that is really rooted in empathy. I think that it's extremely difficult to be a parent right now. You know, after we've lost the quote-unquote village, there's so much that lands on the individual parent's shoulders. And I've done it before, and I definitely understand the need to hand your child a device in order to get what you need to get done. And so when I talk about nature, I talk about it less as something you have to do to get your kid into college, and if you don't give them 1 hour of nature a day, you've been a bad parent. I try to talk to them more about how it's their right to develop a relationship with nature, and how these public lands really belong to them, and they have the right to be there as a family. And then I couch it with a lot of understanding if they can't get there, and then a lot of case management in trying to figure out how to fit leisure, relaxation, and family time into their lives, because there's a lot happening every day. Mm-hmm. And I'm not necessarily against medication when it's needed, and so I really make that known, that I'm not saying that you are somehow bad if your child needs medication, because many children do, but that this is a free resource that may decrease the amount of medication that they need.
And then also, David, because these issues are now getting more attention, I think we've done more shows in the past year just about what technology is doing to our brains and talking about multitasking and all of these things. And every single show, we have full lines and so many emails. Do you think that we might be reversing course because we're raising so much awareness now about these issues?
I hope so, but the truth is that the technology is very, very alluring. And so not only, you know, we all need to get the latest, greatest TV and phone and all the connectivity that comes with it. So at least some people hopefully are getting the message that that you can do too much of that. Technology can be wonderful. It lets us do all kinds of wonderful things. But just like everything else in life, too much of a good thing is not too healthy for you. And so part of us is, you know, part of the recommendations, I think, are to try and figure out what a healthy use of this is and realize that it's crowding out other important things like, you know, being in natural environments, which we know are restorative, and actually interacting with other people on a face-to-face basis. And we know that both interacting in nature and interacting with other people declines as we sit in front of a computer screen. And a computer screen, even if you're talking on some, you know, with video chat, it's not the same as if you're actually really physically in that space talking to that person.
Right.
The other thing that I do is really always bring it back to the parents, because it's easy to talk about how kids are on electronics, but what I see is that kids are missing their parents who are on electronics. And so sometimes that helps the conversation when I talk about parental stress as opposed to focusing on the child, because the parents really want to think about ways to reduce their own stress. And then they can really hear it, that being in nature will help them themselves be less stressed, and their child too.
Right. You were saying that you advocate for kids because they crave attention. They crave conversations with their parents.
They do. And so I see so many programs targeted at children, but I think that first we have to deal with ourselves and our own device addictions. Mm-hmm. And then the children, we model that behavior for the child who will then do likewise.
We have an email from Pastor Sandy Guess. I pastor at Methodist Church on busy Geary Avenue. We have installed a butterfly garden, which surprises people that there is such a place of rest and restoration in such a busy urban setting. Everyone benefits. We once had a homeless man come into the garden. He didn't ask for food. He didn't ask for shelter. He said, "I want to see the butterflies." Mm. We are expanding our church's outreach to include what I have called garden therapy to aid people dealing with addictions and PTSD. Thank you for the program. Wow, what a really great email. Thank you for that, Sandy. Today we have been talking about the benefits of nature on our brains and our overall well-being with Dr. Nushin Razani, pediatrician at UCSF Benioff Children's Hospital at Oakland, and David Strayer, professor of cognitive psychology at the University of Utah. Thank you both for joining us.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you, and I thank you all for joining us, and I hope you can spend some time outside today. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call.
On the next Your Call, we'll examine the history of Cambodia's Khmer Rouge regime. The documentary Days of Justice follows survivors now living in the U.S. as they travel back to Cambodia in search of justice. The brutal regime claimed the lives of about 2 million people from 1975 to 79. The documentary debuts this Saturday at the CamFest Film Festival. What does justice look like after genocide? It's Your Call with guest host me, Hannah Baba, and you.
Your call comes from the listeners of KALW. To listen to past shows or sign up for our podcast, visit yourcallradio.org. Laura Flynn produces the show. Malihe Razazan is senior producer. Matt Martin is executive producer. And Rosalie Atkinson is our intern. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer. And Kevin Vance is our studio engineer. Our theme music is performed and composed by Live Human. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.